When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Most tax pros leave a message.
It's Jane. I'm moving on to a TurboTax expert who beat your price. Adam Devine, tell him how I feel.
Hey, tax pro, she's been thinking twice. Best believe TurboTax will beat your price. This is a tax break.
Switch to a TurboTax live expert and we'll beat what you paid your pro last tax season. Make the switch at TurboTax.com/beat your price. TurboTax full service only. Sign up by 12/20/2024 and file by 4/1/2025. Full details at TurboTax.com/beat your price.
Darkcast Network. Welcome to the dark side of podcasting.
Abgenommen, bedauert.
Frequency.
And thank you for tuning in. Today's show, we have back-to-back episode introduction of Detective Matthew Slade, a tough-talking San Francisco-based PI who goes on a variety of cases. If you enjoy the show, please check out the archives for other detective shows. And after, please be sure to follow the podcast. It would also be great if you could rate and review it as well. And check out the description for links to the website, social medias, merch shop, and more. And with that said, please enjoy the show.
From Hollywood, welcome to Starlight Mystery Theater and another episode in the series Matthew Slade, Private Investigator. We invite you to take your seat as Matthew Slade unfolds the incredible Dr. Lintz.
In my job, the hours are odd. So are the circumstances and the people I meet. You could even call some of them dangerous. My calling card reads, Matthew Slade, Private Investigator. Friday night. And for the first time in months, an entire weekend to myself. I was driving north on Highway 1, headed for the quiet solitude of the mountains, away from people, traffic. The road ahead was black and empty. The headlights of the Continental cut a tunnel of light through the darkness. As I rounded a bend, I picked up the outline of a car pulled to the shoulder of the road. A woman stepped from the shadows and waved for me to stop.
Can you help me, please?
Oh, what's the trouble?
My car refuses to go.
No?
I don't know what's wrong. It just stopped.
You mean the engine just died out on you?
Yeah.
Yeah, sounds like you're out of gas. Yep, that's your problem.
Oh, you must think me stupid to allow myself to run so out of gasoline.
It can happen to anyone. Well, there's not much we can do here. I'll drive you down to the next town.
Thank you.
Your accent sounds German. You been in the States long?
No, neither.
Uh-huh. Where are you headed?
No place in particular.
By the way, my name's Matt Slade.
Erica Lynn.
I seem to remember that name.
You should.
We met before?
Oh, no, Mr. Slade. We've never met.
That's funny. I could swear I've... Oh, yes, now I remember. It was Kyle Lynn's. And you're...
His widow.
I turned to look at her. I found myself staring down the muzzle of a German Luger. I make it a habit never to argue with a lady. Without her noticing, I triggered the tape recorder, as I did. I heard the sound of a helicopter. 25 yards further on, the road emptied into an open field. A small helicopter sat there. waiting. A burly, ugly-looking pug sat at the controls. Erica addressed him as Franz. Seconds later, we were in the air. I tried to sort things out in my mind. I knew that Erica's husband, Kyle Lintz, had been executed in San Quentin's gas chamber 2 years ago. My investigation into a murder case at the time had a lot to do with putting him there. I was puzzled. If she wanted revenge, why all this intricate byplay? She could easily have ended it at the roadside. I could only guess that someone else was pulling the strings. We were in the air for over an hour when the terrain below began to look familiar. We were over Lake Tahoe. A few minutes later, we settled down into a small clearing. A car was waiting there for us. We drove to a castle-like home, set well in amongst the trees. We entered the house, Erica pointing the way with her Luger. Then we stopped outside a large door. When do I meet the lord of the manor?
Your curiosity and impatience will not serve your cause. You will wait. He will greet you soon enough. I shall leave you now. You will wait here, Mr. Slade.
I glanced about the room. The only light came from the fireplace. A fireplace large enough for a man to walk into. The vast marble floor held only two throne-like chairs and a table. It was like something out of King Arthur. The silence was suddenly broken by someone at the door. I couldn't see who it was at first. Then he came closer. The light from the flames cast weird shadows across his face.
Welcome, Mr. Slade.
It is Dr. Lintz, isn't it?
Ah, then you have not forgotten.
We met only once, but then you're not the kind of person one easily forgets.
A compliment. Please, sit down, Mr. Slade. Make yourself comfortable. May I pour you some cognac?
Fine.
Here you are. Very relaxing.
Now, it might also help me to relax if I knew whether I was your guest or your prisoner.
Consider yourself a captive visitor, Mr. Slade.
Well, that answers the what. Now, how about the why?
I have been planning this meeting for some time. To be exact, ever since my son's execution. I am a man who believes in a scientific approach to everything. All life must have a purpose, and so must all death. Since he was innocent, my son's death has no purpose. That brings the scales to an imbalance, if you follow me, Mr. Slade. As a man of science, it is my duty to restore that balance.
Well, what makes you think your son was innocent?
He denied his guilt. I believe him.
The evidence proved otherwise.
The evidence. The evidence you supplied the police.
It wasn't just the evidence I supplied. The police had their own.
Ah, but yours was the most damaging to my son. Without it, the police had a circumstantial case. They'd bet.
That's your opinion.
I deal in fact, Mr. Slade, not opinion.
You've deluded yourself into thinking your son was innocent instead of accepting the fact. The fact, Doctor, that your son was a murderer.
Enough! Now that will be enough, Mr. Slade. Your words will not buy you your freedom. Nor will they save your life.
My life? You plan to kill me?
Nothing quite that deliberate. What is it, Mr. Slade? You look strange.
Cognac, you...
I took the liberty of curtailing any physical action on your part to leave by placing a drug in the cognac.
I can't move.
You will find that rather difficult.
What are you going to do?
I have plans for you, Mr. Slade. Beautiful, beautiful, scientific plan.
Hello?
Jonesy, Citanelli. Do you have any idea where Matt is?
By now he should be comfortably settled in a mountain cabin with all the comforts of a weekend frontiersman.
It looks like something's happened to Matt.
No, what is it?
Nothing to get alarmed about just yet. But I've received a report from Traffic Division. They found Matt's car abandoned near Muir Beach.
Muir Beach? But he was going to Clear Lake.
I'm going down to take a look at the car.
Oh, I'd like to go, too. Could I, Sergeant?
Of course. I'll pick you up in 15 minutes.
When I opened my eyes, I found myself lying on the floor of a small room. It was bare of any furniture or windows. One wall had a faint outline of where a door might be. And my head was still foggy, and my body felt weak from the drug.
How feeling, Mr. Slade.
Lintz?
Yes. The effects of the drug should have gone off by now.
Where are you?
Not far from you, Mr. Slade. The room you're in is fine for sound and for closed circuit television. The small glass above the door is the camera lens. I can see and hear you quite clearly.
What do you intend doing?
I should be delighted to tell you that, Mr. Slade. Without your knowledge, what I intend doing to serve no purpose.
If you intend killing me, why don't you get it over with?
First, I want you to know, Mr. Slade, that you are about to make an important contribution to life. What I am seeking is what effect the knowledge of impending death will have on the human brain. That is to say, how many times can a person be brought to the brink of death with his full knowledge and still maintain mental balance? An interesting question. Don't you agree?
You are insane. You're using the name of science as an excuse for your own lunacy.
Make your accusations, Mr. Slade, if it makes you happy. You have little else left in this world. The first experiment will commence soon. Soon. The method, I'm sure, will intrigue you.
I have no way of knowing just how much time had passed. The seconds seemed like minutes, and the minutes like hours. The first experiment started. The room began to fill with water. In no time, the water level was waist high. Then up to my shoulders, I took a last gasp of air as the water reached ceiling level. I knew the end was near.
It was very close.
The closer Mr. Slade comes to the brink of death, my dear, the more effective the result.
What are you doing here, Lindsay?
It's for Kyle. You must remember that. For Kyle, my dear. And for science.
But is it right to take the law into your own hands?
The law killed my son.
You have said you have proof of Mr. Slade's guilt. If we give it to the police...
I have heard enough, Erica. We'll not discuss this matter any further.
Then show me the proof. Perhaps then I can justify what you are doing.
You doubt my word?
I never have in the past. I've done everything you've asked of me.
Then do not question me now.
But I must.
Erica, does it really matter now who is the guilty one?
What do you mean?
You insist on knowing the truth. Very well. Kyle was guilty.
No.
The proof was from Kyle's own lips.
Then how can you blame Mr. Slade?
Whether Kyle was innocent or guilty makes no difference. Mr. Slade was the one responsible for his execution. That makes the conditions perfect for his being a subject for my experiment.
Avenging Kyle's death is not the reason you wanted Mr. Slade. You were only looking for an excuse. A justification to subject someone to your hideous experiments. Surely you feel guilt for what you are doing to him.
None whatsoever.
Stop now before it's too late.
I won't allow you to interfere in my work. I won't allow it.
Mr. Slade, are you all right?
I feel groggy.
Here. I made you some soup. It will help you regain your strength.
Why are you doing this?
Because I must.
Your father-in-law wouldn't approve.
Finish the soup. You'll need your strength if you're going to escape.
Escape?
I'm going to help you, Mr. Slade.
Now, why this change of heart?
I've been wrong. I thought revenge for Kyle's death was what I wanted more than anything. Until Stefan told me that Kyle was guilty.
He admitted that?
Yeah. He's lost all contact with reality, Mr. Slade. He's obsessed with this experiment.
Yeah, well, I'd say he's gone completely out of his mind.
He needed a reason to subject you to his experiment. To satisfy his conscience by believing he was avenging Kyle.
Yeah, well, that doesn't make him any the less dangerous. Yeah, you have a plan for getting out of here?
He has all the exits monitored, except for a tunnel under the house. That's our only hope.
How do we get to it?
There's an entrance from the cellar. The tunnel leads out above the river on the opposite side of the hill. The road to town is not far from there. I'll show you the way.
How much further?
Not far. The tunnel turns sharply to the right. Right up ahead. You can see the exit from there. Another few feet around the bend. There's a... Oh,
the iron gate. It's sealed off.
I did not know there was a gate.
Well, maybe I can move it. Won't budge. Well, where do we go from here?
There's no place to go, Mrs. Slade, except back the way we came.
Well, we'll go back. Maybe we can find another way out. Come on. Still a chance the good doctor hasn't discovered our absence.
I wouldn't count on that, Mr. Slade.
Lynch. Lynch.
I am here, Mr. Slade. Right here on the other side of the gate. It was foolish of you to try to escape. Has he harmed you, my dear?
No. This was my idea.
You? Aiding him? I never dreamed that you would be disloyal to me, to Kyle.
I beg of you, Sergeant. Forget the revenge.
There is more to this than merely vengeance. I told you that.
You mean your experiments?
Yes, my experiments.
They're a figment of your twisted imagination. They have no scientific basis, Lynch.
Let us help you, Father.
Help me? Yes. Yes, of course. You both can help me. You will remain here where you are for now. Yes, I must prepare. I shall return soon, and then you will give me all the help I need.
This is Sergeant Donnelly, San Francisco Police. I'd like to speak with Sheriff Rogers. Yeah, I'll hang on. They're calling him to the phone.
Oh, I hope our time isn't running out.
Hello? Sheriff Rogers? This is Sergeant Sid Donnelly, San Francisco Police. I'm calling on an urgent matter, Sheriff. Every minute we delay could cost a man his life. Now, here's what I'd like you to do. And Erica Lentz and Dr. Stephen Lentz have a home on the north shore of the lake. They're holding a man by the name of Matthew Slade. And we think they mean to kill him. I'm on my way there by plane. I should be there in an hour. I'll meet you at the Lynn's home. Yeah, and hurry, Sheriff. He's on his way, Jonesy, and I'd better be on mine.
Let me come with you.
I'd rather you stayed here.
Please.
Okay, there's no time to argue about it. Let's go.
Erica and I were still locked in our tunnel cell. I was examining the iron gate which blocked our entrance back to the house when an idea came to me.
What are you doing, Mr. Slade?
If I can jam these rocks through this opening at the top of the gate. It's working.
I do not understand. What will that do?
Well, it's not an immediate solution to our problem, but it may buy us some time. We can't get out, but if the gate won't open, then the good doctor can't get in. Now there, that should keep him away for a while.
Oh, what good is time, Mr. Slade?
Well, I'm hoping by now some people are aware of what's happened.
How could anyone know?
I have a tape recorder in my car. I turned it on while we were driving to the helicopter. If the police have found the car and played that recording, well, it should lead them right here.
Shh. Listen. He's coming.
Someone's with him.
Sorry to keep you waiting. I know you are both anxious to make your contribution to science. Open the gate, brother.
You can tell your boy to stop trying, Lenz. The gate won't open.
What is wrong, Frank? Stand aside.
I told you I took care of it.
Clever of you, Mr. Slade. Front, go to the laboratory. Bring the laser quickly. I admire your ingenuity, Mr. Slade, but it will only serve to delay the inevitable.
Maybe.
I dare say that you are the most optimistic person I have ever met. Accept your fate, Mr. Slade. It will make it so much easier for us all.
Father,
please. Fire, Erica. I never intended to harm you, my dear, but you leave me no choice.
Leave her out of this.
You cannot reason with the madman. We are going to die.
Die, that is right. Yes, die.
Lynn seemed to be in another dimension. His eyes looked right through us as he talked. They grew large and his maniacal look became more intense. Then Franz returned, carrying a peculiar-looking instrument that resembled a rifle but was much bulkier. Lenz took the instrument and pointed it at the gate.
Anything in the path of the laser will be instantly destroyed.
I pulled Erica to one side of the tunnel. Lenz steadied the instrument. A series of light beams shot out from it. The iron bars were severed as neatly as if they were made of putty.
Impressive, Mr. Slade.
Incredible. What is it?
A laser gun. Scientifically, light amplification by stimulated emission of radiation. A commanding weapon. Now, step this way and please
do not be foolish enough to try anything. You have seen what the laser can do to metal. Imagine its impact on human flesh.
I had no inclination to tangle with Linz, as long as he held the laser. He motioned us through the tunnel into the house and finally into his laboratory on the second floor. He instructed his mute servant, Franz, to strap Erica and me to two large tables set in the middle of the room. As Franz approached me, I grabbed his arm, twisting it behind his back, pulling him between Linz and me.
Foolish move, Mr. Slade. Let him go.
Not a chance. If you intend using that, you'll have to kill Franz, too.
You think I wouldn't? I'll give you just 3 seconds to release him. If you do not, need I tell you the consequences? 3 seconds.
As he reached the count of three, I shoved Franz toward him and dove to my right. I could see the flash of the laser. My head struck the table and I fell into a whirlpool of darkness. When I regained consciousness, I found myself strapped at the table. A pungent odor filled the room. I rolled my head to the left and saw Franz lying on the floor.
Not a pretty sight, Mr. Slade. You're as much to blame as I. Be thankful it wasn't you or Erica.
Where is Erica?
The table behind you.
What have you done to her?
A simple injection. She is unconscious. And now, Mr. Slade, this hypodermic is for you. Sparkling will do no good. Those straps can hold a man with 10 times your strength. Only a fool continues to resist when resistance is futile. It is done.
What was in that syringe?
You have a curious mind, Mr. Slade. I have injected both you and Erica with a substance which will set into operation within your bodies a dehydration process. Death will come slowly and painfully. You will have endless time to contemplate it.
Yes. Yes, I think I shall make this your last experiment.
The injection began to take effect. A numbness crept through my bones. My head was swirling. I was on the brink of unconsciousness. Lynn started removing the straps that bound me to the table. I fought the narcosis with the last bit of resistance left in me. Linz would think me too weak now to try anything. I knew this would be my last chance for survival. As he removed the final strap, I summoned every ounce of strength left in me and swung my right hand to his face. He slumped to the floor. I was sure I had only a few conscious minutes left. I made my way to the door, down the stairs, out onto the front drive of the house. I stumbled and fell, my head ringing with 1,000 bells. At first, the police siren seemed to be a part of them, but then I saw the car and the 2 officers running toward me.
Matt?
Yes.
Well, what's happened to you?
Drugged. The house.
Are they in there?
Yes.
Wait. The girl.
Okay. Dr. Linz, mad. Be careful. Deadly weapon.
Well, someone's in the doorway.
Linz.
Sheriff, cover him.
Welcome, gentlemen.
The laser. Watch out. One of the officers was hit by the laser, but his bullet had found its mark. What I had anticipated to be a quiet weekend of solitude had turned into an incredible nightmare. For the first time, I realized that this very Black Friday was also the 13th day of the month.
This is the United States Armed Forces Radio and Television Service.
Thank you.
pros, leave a message.
It's Jane. I'm moving on to a TurboTax expert who beat your price. Adam Devine, tell him how I feel.
Hey, tax pro, she's been thinking twice. Best believe TurboTax will beat your price. This is a tax break.
Switch to a TurboTax Live expert and we'll beat what you paid your pro last tax season. Make the switch at TurboTax.com/beat your price. TurboTax full service only. Sign up by 12/20/2024 and file by 4/1/2025. Full details at TurboTax.com/beat your price.
Most tax pros leave a message.
It's Jane. I'm moving on to a TurboTax expert who beat your price. Adam Devine, tell him how I feel.
Hey, tax pro, she's been thinking twice. Best believe TurboTax will beat your price. This is a tax break.
Switch to a TurboTax Live expert and we'll beat what you paid your pro last tax season. Make the switch at TurboTax.com/beat your price. TurboTax full service only. Sign up by 12/20/2024 and file by 4/1/2025. Full details at TurboTax.com/beat your price.
From Hollywood, welcome to Starlight Mystery Theater and another episode in the series, Matthew Slade, Private Investigator. We invite you to take your seat as Matthew Slade unfolds A Sweet Scent of Mystery.
In my job, the hours are odd. So are the circumstances and the people I meet. You could even call some of them dangerous. My calling card reads, Matthew Slade, Private Investigator. This case began at a small social gathering I attended at the home of a prominent lawyer. I just completed some legal dog tracking for him, and we were celebrating his success in court. I was about to seek temporary refuge on the terrace from the noisy, smoke-filled room when I was suddenly enveloped by the sweet scent of a heavy perfume. I turned, was confronted by an attractive woman. She was a good deal older than she appeared. Her slender figure was enhanced by a simple black dress. She possessed delicate features, large blue eyes, her face framed in a halo of soft blonde hair. She looked at me in frank amusement at my quick appraisal.
I hope you're not planning to desert our cozy little group, Mrs. Slade. I've been trying to get over to meet you all evening, and now you're running out. Is that fair?
Just stepping out for some fresh air.
It is rather stuffy in here. Mind if I join you?
I'd be delighted. After you.
Thank you.
Cigarette.
Thank you.
You have a distinct advantage over me.
Oh?
Well, you know who I am, but
Oh, forgive me. My name is Grace Burroughs.
My pleasure, Mrs. Burroughs.
Are you married?
Well, I was born and raised a bachelor.
I thought so. I'm beginning to think only the weaklings fall prey to that unhappy misfortune called matrimony. The weak ones do it only because they think they need someone to lean on. I married one. Fortunately, I found my way clear to correcting that mistake. However, my daughter Laurie made the same mistake. And now? Now it's cost her life.
I don't quite understand.
My daughter Laurie Thompson was killed when our house burned in Belvedere almost a month ago.
I remember reading about that in the papers. That's an unfortunate accident.
It was no accident, Mrs. Slade. My daughter was murdered.
Well, I can understand your grief, Mrs. Burroughs, but I...
I know what you're thinking, but you're wrong. I have proof.
Would you care to tell me about it?
Yes. The police said that the screen hadn't been properly closed and that a spark set the carpet ablaze. But that's not it at all.
Go on.
Since childhood, Laurie's been deathly afraid of fire. The fireplace would not have been in use at all unless someone had been with her.
And there was no evidence of anyone else being there?
None at all.
Well, what about her husband?
Bob? He didn't turn up until the next morning. It seems he spent the greater part of the evening at a bar called the Drift Inn. He was drunk as usual. At least he had sense enough not to drive. He slept it off in the car in the parking lot. The bartender verified his story.
Well, did you tell the police about this fear your daughter had?
Yes. Oh, they made a feeble attempt at an investigation. And that's why when I saw you here tonight, I decided to ask you for your help.
Well, I don't know that I'd be able to find much more than the police, Mrs. Burroughs, especially at this late date. Have you thought of the possibility of suicide?
Definitely not. Laurie was strong-willed. No matter how difficult the situation may have been, she would never have taken the easy way out.
Was there a difficult situation?
Oh, yes, I'm afraid there was.
I see. Tell me about it.
My son-in-law was nothing before he married Laurie. First, Barbara resisted the idea of living off Laurie's income. But when his efforts to find a job failed, he slowly succumbed to the inevitable and turned to drinking for his solace. When Laurie reached the age of 30, less than a year ago it was, she received a sizable inheritance in addition to a monthly allowance from the trust. Bob wanted to use it to start his own business. Oh, some foolish idea of selling foreign sport cars. I was against it. As I had anticipated, within 6 months the business folded. He wanted more money to try again, but Laurie wouldn't give it to him. He even threatened to leave her because of it. That was 2 months ago. He's been drunk ever since.
Where is he living now?
Oh, in some rented apartment at the Shoreline Motel, I think it's called, on Highway 101. I understand he spends most of his time at the Tristan Bar.
Could anyone else have paid Laurie a visit that evening?
My daughter was not in the habit of keeping company with other men.
I understand some women still consider other women as friends.
I'm very sorry. It's just that... Well, never mind. Laurie had many friends. None of them were as close to her as her sister Patricia. Pat was with me that evening.
That doesn't appear much for me to go on.
Will you try and find the truth for me?
All right. I'll start tomorrow. Now, I'd better take you inside before you catch cold. Then I'll find our host and say goodnight.
I think I'll stay out here just a while longer.
All right.
Good night and thank you.
I'll be in touch, Mrs. Burroughs. On the way home, I went over in my mind a few facts Mrs. Burroughs had given me. Few indeed. I suspected there was a lot more to this than she wished me to believe. Since she seemed so convinced her daughter was murdered, I was sure she had a prime suspect in mind. But she wasn't about to tell, not yet anyway. I wondered why she had so quickly come to the defense of her daughter's morals. Certainly the police had asked her the same question. Evidently, she'd had time to think about them. And maybe, just maybe, she had a few answers she didn't like. I was determined to find out what they were. And the most likely source would be Bob Thompson. The next morning, I had Jonesy wade through the society columns of back issues at the newspaper morgue. I went over the fire report at police headquarters. It stated no more than I had expected. A neighbor reported the fire. By the time the department got there was little they could do. A routine investigation was made. A few tangible remains were found identifying the woman's body. A silver locket. Brass buckles from a pair of slippers and a diamond wedding ring. I phoned Jonesy at the office, found that her investigation had been almost as fruitless as mine. Laurie Thompson was at the top of the social register. She was active in numerous charity organizations, and because of her beauty, a favorite subject of the society photographers. The stories were all along those lines. No gossip, no scandal. She was typically top drawer. I drove out to the Shoreline Motel. Thompson wasn't there, hadn't been since the previous night. My next stop, the Drift Inn. I entered the dimly lit barroom. There were several customers, but I was able to pick out Bob Thompson at first glance. He sat hulked over the bar. Bob Thompson?
Who are you?
Are you Bob Thompson?
Last time I looked, yeah.
Is there somewhere we can talk?
Tell out the bad wall.
Your wife?
I haven't got a wife. This has been my wife. Keeps me happy, gives me courage, and it's always there when I need it.
You may be right, but nonetheless, I want to talk about your wife, Laurie, not about the whiskey.
Who are you?
Matthew Slade, private investigator.
Private eye. I thought you people only existed in pulp books.
Oh, no, some of us are for real. I want to make a few inquiries concerning your wife's accident.
Roy's accident? What for? She's dead. She's gone. How what difference does it make now?
Well, the difference between an accident, suicide, or murder.
What are you talking about? Oh, now I get it. Grace, you've been talking to her mother. I suppose she told you I killed Laurie.
No, she didn't.
She will. She told me right to my face. You killed her, she said. I'll make you pay. I suppose she figured out a way to blame me. Well, I mean, it doesn't matter. Laurie's gone. There's nothing... Nothing left for me anyway.
Yeah, well, all I want to know is where you were the night of Laurie's death.
I was here. I'm always here. Once in her life, she needed me, and I wasn't there to help. But I loved her, Slade. Can you believe that? She was perfect. No matter how rotten I got, she continued to love me. And maybe she'd just gotten mad at me once or blown up at me. I might have had the guts to get out and do something about it, make something of myself. And, you know, she never cheated on me. She wouldn't even let me serve as a good excuse for that.
You started a business a couple months ago, didn't you?
Yeah, with Laurie's money. I couldn't even do that without her. I was doing pretty good, too.
The night of the fire.
I spent a day on the beach. I went home for dinner, and I came here. That's it. I always end up here.
Did you have an argument?
I never argue. Nothing to argue about. She was too perfect. I was too weak.
Was she expecting anyone that night?
Not that I know of. She would have told me.
Did she seem worried or preoccupied with anything?
Laura never worried about anything. I don't know what you're getting at, Slade. Maybe you'd better explain it.
Yeah, well, I'm not quite sure myself. When you left her that night, did Laurie have a fire going?
I don't remember, but I doubt it. She didn't like to have a fire unless I was there to attend to it. Slade?
Yes?
No matter what Grace has up her sleeve, you can't accuse me of killing Laurie. You see, I got the best alibi in the world.
Oh, yeah? What's that?
I'm too much of a coward.
At least I'd learned something this morning. Grace Boyles did have a suspect in mind. I was convinced she was wrong. Thompson was no murderer. And I got back to the office in time for lunch and found Jonesy amidst a stack of old newspaper clippings. She was munching on a hamburger.
Well, well, Homewood comes my dashing hero.
What's this? Food for the soul as well as the body?
Very funny. You just don't realize how hard I work around here.
Well, tell me, have you found anything tarnishing on our golden girl?
Well, there is something that struck me as rather odd.
Oh, what's that, pray tell?
Well, if you were a society belle like Lorraine Thompson, and you went to lots of balls and gala affairs, would you like having your little sister tagging along all the time? And if you were the little sister, wouldn't you feel like a fit queen?
Well, yes, I suppose so. Now, what are you getting at?
If you were that little sister, wouldn't you try to get your own dates and make it a foursome?
All right. I'll play your little game. Now, what's the next clue?
It's just that in all these reports and pictures, Mr. and Mrs. Thompson are accompanied by Lorraine's younger sister, Patricia. Matt, it's odd that a girl like Patricia Burroughs doesn't have at least one young man interested in her. Yet in all these pictures, she's alone. There's got to be some reason, and my guess is she's quite happy just being a tag-along. Because she's in love with Thompson.
Jonesy.
Look, Matt, just look. In every one of these pictures, Patricia is looking at Bob like a lovesick cat.
Oh, now, come on, sweetheart. You're an incurable romantic.
No, just a lot wiser about the ways of women than you seem to be. And I'd be willing to bet 1 week's pay that I'm right.
All right, Jonesy. I promise to keep that in mind when I talk to her.
Where are you going?
Well, to see Patricia Burroughs. The Burroughs home, located in Forest Hills, was a southern colonial, surrounded by spacious, three-shaded grounds. I was greeted at the door by a uniformed butler and shown to a richly furnished library where I was told to await Mrs. Burroughs. A few moments later, she appeared, preceded by that familiar, heavy wave of perfume.
Have you brought news?
Not exactly, but I would like to talk with your daughter.
Mrs. Slade?
Yes?
Maybe I'm just getting cold feet, but everyone seems to think I'm making a big thing of this. Possibly to the point of making a complete fool of myself.
Just who is everyone?
Well, William, for one. He seems to think that...
William? Excuse me, who's William?
William Jennings. He's been a family friend for years. I value his advice.
He advises that you discontinue the investigation?
Yes. He feels that even if Laurie was murdered, there's nothing we can do about it now. The police are satisfied it was an accident, and there'd be such unfavorable publicity.
Well, Mrs. Burroughs, at the moment, I can't be positive that your daughter was murdered. I don't even have a good suspect. But I'm curious enough now to continue the investigation, to find out the truth.
You were right, Mr. Slade. I too want to know the truth, no matter what you may find. Anything will be better than not knowing, never being sure.
Well, I can assure you that everything will be done quietly. And now, if I may, talk with Patricia.
Of course. I'll have Malcolm show you the way to the pool.
Patricia Burroughs was sunning herself beside an Olympic-sized pool. My nostrils picked up the aroma of the same perfume worn by her mother. She looked about 21, 5'2", I guess about 98 pounds. And she was cute. Very cute. Miss Burroughs.
Attached to you, Mr. Slade. I've been wondering when you'd get around to me. Please sit down.
Had I known what I'd be getting around to, I would have made it sooner.
Flattery will get you everywhere. Now, what are we going to talk about?
Your sister. Tell me, was she unhappy with her marriage?
Well, she and Bob could have had more of an exciting life if she just let herself go. But she felt Bob needed the quiet life. She asked me. It was the other way around.
Well, would you care to elaborate on that?
Well, Laurie was afraid of life. She used Bob as an excuse to shy away from really digging in and enjoying it.
Was she in love with him?
In a way, I suppose. But it wasn't the kind he needed. She was more like a mother than a wife. As an outside observer, Mr. Slade, one often sees more than a participant.
As an outside observer, I'd say you were in love with him. The more I got into this case, the less sense it made. I had long since discarded my first thoughts that Lorraine Thompson committed suicide. She was too sensible and well-adjusted for that. Maybe it was an accident. Maybe I was on a wild goose chase. Nevertheless, with her fetish about fire, someone must have been with her that night. But who? And if so, why didn't that someone try to help her or come forward with an explanation? And I was right back where I started. The suspects were fading in and out like a fast-action B-movie. I was convinced that Bob Thompson was innocent. Patricia was admittedly in love with her sister's husband, but I doubted that she'd kill because of it. Then there was William Jennings. If he was in love with Lori, then where was his motive for murder? Had she been seeing him on the sly? The possibilities were endless. But it all added up to a big, fat zero. After a sleepless night of wrestling with my theories, I showered, dressed, and headed for the office. Well, good morning, sleeping beauty.
I'm putting in for overtime.
Oh.
I spent all afternoon and half the night checking on William Jennings.
Well, you just didn't have to go to all that trouble, sweetheart.
I thought you might like to have it first thing. Here's what I found. It's all typed out.
Well, thanks.
Oh, and one other thing, Matt.
Oh, yeah?
I called Mr. Jennings' office this morning. His secretary said he was leaving for Los Angeles today on his honeymoon.
Get me a seat on that noon plane to L.A., sweetheart.
Haven't you heard? 3 o'clock?
No, it can't be helped. I've got some questions that won't wait for answers, and you can drive me to the airport. I'll even buy you lunch before I leave.
A real, honest-to-goodness lunch?
How's about something like, a filet?
You just bought yourself a chauffeur, mister.
West Coast Airlines, flight 417, departing for Los Angeles, gate 7. Final call, all aboard, please.
A quick check with the airline gave me Jennings Hotel, the Sunset Palms, a typical Hollywood facade surrounded by a few palm trees and concrete landscaping. I entered the glass-enclosed lobby, went to the desk, slipped a blank sheet of paper into an envelope, addressed it to Jennings, and watched the clerk place it in box 303. I made my way around the crowded poolside to the elevator and minutes later located Jennings' room on the third floor.
Who is it?
Matthew Slade. I'd like to talk to you.
I don't know anyone by that name. You must have the wrong room.
Or maybe you know more about the name Lorraine Thompson.
Now look here. I don't know who you are or what business you have concerning Lorraine, but I happen to be on my honeymoon.
I'm well aware of the fact that you not only know who I am, but that I'm working for Grace Burroughs to investigate her daughter's death. Let's talk about it.
Come in. My wife knows nothing of my acquaintance with Lorraine. She's in the next room.
You and Lorraine Thompson were very good friends.
I've known her since we were children.
Were you in love with her?
I suppose our relationship could have been misconstrued by some people.
When did you see her last?
The night of her death. She called me. Anyway, she wanted my advice.
So you went over, right?
I arrived about an hour after her call, about 9:30, but she wasn't there. I waited around for a while, and then I went home.
Were you curious as to where she might have gone?
I'd suppose she'd gone for another one of her therapy drives. That was her pet name for it. Whenever she had a problem, she'd get in her car and just drive.
Yesterday, Grace Burroughs told me that you had advised her against continuing the investigation. Why?
I thought the publicity would do her a great deal of damage.
Are you sure you weren't trying to hide something?
Now, look here. I've been more than generous in humoring you and your insinuations. I told you all I know. If you don't mind, I'd appreciate you leaving.
I could turn you into the police for withholding evidence, but I guess I'm just a romanticist at heart. You know, your honeymoon and all that. And besides, I think you've forgotten a few things. And you may want to tell me them later. Adios. The heavy wave of perfume so familiar to Mrs. Burroughs and to her daughter Pat was much in evidence in room 303 of the Sunset Palms. I was about to calculate my next move when... Within seconds, I ran down the corridor and forced my way into the room. Jennings had his back to me, clutching the woman by the throat. Her arms were around his neck in a grotesque embrace, hands grasping wildly, vainly searching for some vital target. I spun him around and I hit him with a well-placed right hook. He went down and out. Lorraine Thompson stood holding onto a nearby chair for support. Her dark, silky hair hung tousled about her shoulders, her eyes desperately fighting to comprehend the past few moments. I called the police. It's over now. I sit down over here. There. Now, you feel up to telling me about it?
Well, Bill and I have been seeing each other for some time. I finally realized that I didn't love my husband. I pitied him. Tried to mother him. I could see it was only making him weaker, more dependent, but I couldn't just leave him. The night of the fire, Bob and I had an argument. He wanted more money for his business. I was so confused, I called Bill for his advice. Then I decided to make the decision on my own. I went for one of my therapy drives. The rest of the story is like a horrible dream.
Go on.
I wasn't paying attention to the road. I'd ridden it 1,000 times. Suddenly there was a woman crossing the road. I was going too fast. I couldn't stop. I tried to swerve. The woman just stood there. The car went out of control, and I hit her. When I finally managed to stop the car, I went back. She seemed to be alive, so I put her in the back seat of the car and drove home where Bill was waiting for me. He helped me get the woman into the house, and I was about to call the doctor when Bill said she was dead. I panicked. He said it was our chance to get away together and for me to get out of the murder charge. Bill put my ring on the woman's finger and a few other things for identification, then started the fire. He drove me to the airport, and I flew down here. I realized what a terrible thing I had done, but Bill bolstered my courage. Then he wanted to draw my savings out of the bank and fly to Mexico. Yesterday, I decided to give the money to Bob. I thought it might be of some consolation to him. He'd be better off without me anyway. When I told Bill what I planned to do, he became furious. Then you showed up. Bill got frightened, wanted to leave for Mexico today. I told him I couldn't go on. It would be best if we gave ourselves up. He suddenly became enraged. He said I could stay, but he wanted the money. He tried to kill me. What will happen to us, Mr. Slade?
Well, you'll have to go back and face charges for the accident. And if what you told me is true, Bill Jennings will be charged with conspiracy. Possible murder.
Oh, no.
Well, chances are the woman wasn't dead. In which case, technically he or both of you killed her.
I never would have guessed it, Matt. I had all my money riding on dear little sister.
Well, you can't be right all the time. Besides, you know, you were the one who put me onto the scent with your hunch about Patricia. It was she who gave me the first clue. Oh, that reminds me. I picked up a little consolation prize for you. Here.
Oh.
Open it. Go ahead.
Perfume. Thank you.
Wear it around the office. I kind of got used to it on this case.
Oh, Matt.
This is the United States Armed Forces Radio and Television Service.
To create your dream kitchen with Clearview Cabinetry at Menards. With multiple finishes to choose from, you'll be sure to find a style that fits perfect for you. Clearview Cabinetry offers features like soft closed doors and drawers as standard and cabinet accessories to match your unique style. Explore Clearview's cabinet options and start designing today in store or on Menards.com, where you can find more of our great deals going on now.
Save big money at Menards.
Most tax pros leave a message.
It's Jane. I'm moving on to a TurboTax expert who beat your price. Adam Devine, tell him how I feel.
Hey, tax pro, she's been thinking twice. Best believe TurboTax will beat your price. This is a tax break.
Switch to a TurboTax Live expert and we'll beat what you paid your pro last tax season. Make the switch at TurboTax.com/beat your price. TurboTax full service only. Sign up by 12/20/2024 and file by 4/1/2025. Full details at TurboTax.com/beat your price.